There is so much I could say about this passage from John's Gospel. Honestly, we could spend several Sundays unpacking all the pieces of this story and examining all the questions it raises for us. Like, why doesn't Jesus leave Bethany right away when he hears that Lazarus is sick? What does all the emphasis on glory tell us about God and about Jesus? What about Martha's confession? Yes, you are the Christ, the Son of God, the one who was to come into the world. This chapter gives us Jesus' fifth I am statement. I am the resurrection and the life. This miracle is also at the heart of John's gospel, and it serves as a pivot in the narrative between Jesus' public ministries and his private teachings of the disciples. It is this miracle that raises significant concerns among temple leadership. Lazarus rising from the dead and the way Jesus empowers people to live new lives is seen as a threat to the status quo. After Lazarus rises from the dead, the plot to kill Jesus begins to take shape. But the part of the story I am choosing to focus on today, the part that fits into our Emerge Worship series, comes at the end of this reading, when Jesus calls Lazarus, come out, and the stone is rolled away from the tomb, and Lazarus comes out, and Jesus tells the community to unbind him and let him go. In her sermon on this text, Lutheran preacher Nadia Bolz-Weber asks, what must this feel like to Lazarus? First of all, this is totally unexpected, right? Nobody except Jesus is expecting Lazarus to rise from the dead. When Jesus shows up in Bethany, I would imagine everyone expects him to comfort Martha and Mary. Maybe shed a few tears, say a few sympathetic words, offer a prayer, maybe a tissue. Nobody, not the family, not the mourners, not the disciples, not Lazarus himself, expects anything out of the ordinary. Lazarus is dead. 4 days dead. Dead long enough that his soul has departed from his body. Long enough, says the King James translation of the scripture, that he stinketh. So Bolz-Weber ponders, what is this like for Lazarus? When the stone is rolled away, letting in the light of day, does he shield his eyes? When he shuffles toward the entrance of the tomb, does he follow the voices calling him, one hand on the wall, to feel his way out? What does it feel like to have those grave clothes unwrapped? Is he itching, anxious to have them off? Or is he motionless, still stunned by what has come about? And then Jesus gives the community work to do. Jesus says to the crowd, unbind him and let him go. Unbind him. Get rid of the things that prevent him from stepping into the light of new life. Get rid of the sins of the past. They are forgiven. They are forgotten. Get rid of the old behaviors, the rot and the stink. Get rid of the doubts and the fears that inhibit abundant living and rise up to new life. But if you have ever tried to break old patterns, to move beyond your past mistakes, then you know it helps to have the support of family and friends. I had a couple of different jobs before I became a pastor. One was with the American Lung Association. I was a program associate, meaning I organized a variety of teaching opportunities. So I gave in-school smoking prevention talks and asthma clinics for kids, organized monthly meetings for adults with COPD, planned teaching days for medical professionals, and I offered smoking cessation clinics for adult smokers trying to kick the habit. And the advice for smokers included, take the time to understand why you smoke. Is it about stressful times or times when you're bored? Is it about habits, always after a meal, always with a cup of coffee? Is it always around
certain family members or friends. Understand the why, then plan the how. Make a plan for those situations. Find other ways to manage stress. Take a break. Get some fresh air. Breathe deeply. Chew gum. Change your routine to address the boredom. Drink tea instead of coffee. Glad Celeste isn't here to hear me say that. And list the support of your family and friends. Can they agree not to smoke around you? Can you make some plans with friends who are non-smokers for a few weeks till you've gotten past the worst of the withdrawal and the cravings? Making a big change is hard. You need people in your corner who see what you are doing and celebrate it. Now, of course, Lazarus' family and friends celebrated his new life. How could they not? But when we embrace the power God gives us to rise to new life, to leave behind the mistakes and the sins of our past and live for God, do we have people in our corner who see the changes we are making and celebrate them with us? I hope so. I really hope so. I hope, to use our butterfly imagery here, that when the people in our lives see our wings beginning to emerge, they cheer us on. They might not know any more than we do what we're ultimately going to look like. But if our friends are really in our corner, then they are trusting just like we are that the possibility emerging in us will be beautiful and Christ-like. We are trusting that when Jesus calls our name and says to us, "Come out," what is emerging within us will glorify God and build God's kingdom. We are trusting that shedding those old grave clothes will reveal what God always intended us to be: messengers of God's love and grace, doers of God's justice and peace. All right, here's what I invite you to do this morning. I want you to hold up your hand like it's a mirror. Look into that mirror and say to yourself, "I see new life in you." Now, turn towards someone who's sitting near you, maybe next to you, and say to that person, "I see new life in you." Now, look around the room. Look for someone you don't know as well as that person sitting next to you. And stand up and go over to them and look that person in the eye and say to that person, "I see new life in you."